Okay, committee, we're going to call ourselves back into order. And I'm not for sure where we want to go. We'll start at the top and go to Congresswoman Whitehorn's 2563. Okay. ONCA 2565. Congresswoman Redcorn, we've had a very lengthy discussion on this, so.
Chair.
Yes, Congresswoman.
So I realize that for the sake of time, that we'll probably only make it so far through this bill. I will say one thing that I do want to add for those that are thinking about it in this way. I have two pieces of legislation that are filed. One deals with Chapter 1 of the tax code, and the other deals with this one right here deals with Chapter 2. In my opinion, albeit I am not a lawyer, but in my opinion, the changes that were made to Chapter 1 that are heard in GovOps can go out separate from this. I feel like it can be a separate consideration. So for those of you who are thinking that one has to go out with the other, I don't think that that frame of mind has to be true. That being said, I do think that this one pertains much more directly to what we've been talking about in this committee, which is paying our smoke shop retailers and dealing with this tobacco compact tax, the meat, basically, of our tax code, because let's be honest, this is the meat of it for us. We are not sitting here talking about other sales tax and other taxes. We're talking about our tobacco tax. The meat of that is here in this bill. And so also for the appreciation of time and our time with Assistant Attorney General Cass, I would like, if it's okay with you, Chair, for her to highlight what she's done in this bill, and we can ask her questions while we have her presence because she won't be here the rest of the week.
Okay, Ms. Cass.
Thank you, Congresswoman Redcorn and members of the committee. So the main things that ONCA 2565 does is first repeal ONCA 2540, which I think we've discussed in length why the tax commission feels that bill needs to be, well, that law needs to be repealed. Another amendment we have in section 2 for definitions is en banc. Like I said, mentioned previously, we have litigation pending against a retailer. We have an outside attorney who is not familiar with tribal law arguing that our tax commission does not have the authority to make administrative decisions because there's not five of them. So this en banc definition fixes that legal argument that's been brought up in court recently. So the next section, which is tax on cigarettes, this is like what Cherokee Nation uses, but we've changed it to territory of the Osage Nation at a rate agreed upon between the nation and the state in a tobacco tax compact. So the rate would be determined by whatever is agreed to in the compact. And as I stated previously, we've made this bill retroactive, so it would go back to what we had previously, which is the $20.30.
Chairman.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Ms. Cass, are we on the bill that was filed April 11th? One that's stamped April 11th?
There is a committee substitute submitted this morning.
Has the committee substitute been adopted?
No.
Okay, so I'm not on the right bill right now. So is that in our email? Okay.
Chair. Congresswoman Redcorn.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to adopt the committee sub that you all received stamped in at 11:10 a.m. this morning.
have a motion. Is there a second? We have a second. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Those opposed? Hearing none. It'll be adopted.
So back to section 2-102, the tax on cigarettes. Without reading the line by line, we've changed it to territory of the Osage Nation, because that's what it states in our Constitution. At a rate agreed upon between the nation and the state of Oklahoma in a tobacco tax compact, because that's what it is. It's an agreement that that's the tax we're going to apply to cigarettes and other tobacco products. So sections 2-102 and 2-103 are the same language. We had some other discussions about how to word this section, and this was the best we could come up with that was more pro-sovereignty, that established that the nation had the right to tax, but per an agreement with the state, we tax according to whatever that agreement is. And there's also section B in there that in the absence of a compact, the tax authority board shall pass a rule to establish a tax rate. And language like if any can be added in there, we're open to discussion on that. As I said previously, section 2-103 is basically the same, but that applies to tax on tobacco products. Section 2-106, this language, A, is the same as the previous law. It has the payment has to be evidenced by a stamp, but we've added in a section that in the absence of a compact, the board has the authority to approve a stamp evidencing payment of a tobacco tax, whether created and issued by the nation or another tribal wholesaler.
Chairman.
Congressman Whitehorn.
I'd like some more explanation on that, because I think we were kind of having a casual conversation about that earlier, and I think that I'd like to understand.
So we have been, if you go down to section 9, purchase from tribal wholesalers, it's a new section that in the absence of a compact between the nation and the state, the nation may enter into an agreement with a tribal wholesaler in order for licensed Osage Nation retailers to purchase cigarettes and other tobacco products. And it says the agreement shall address the application of a tobacco tax, if any, and if necessary, shall address whether the nation or the tribal wholesaler provides the tobacco tax stamp. So we've been approached by a tribal wholesaler that said they are willing to sell cigarettes and other tobacco products to the nation's retailers. So this law allows for that process to happen.
Congressman Whitehorn.
In an uncompacted environment.
Correct.
And what would the legal ramifications be for the nation and the wholesaler and the retailers to operate in an uncompacted environment, selling cigarettes to non-tribal members? Because I think that that lawsuit out of the Supreme Court addressed that, and that's why we're in compact. So I need some assurances of how that works, and if we're going to end up getting ourselves into a lawsuit as a nation because of that. Can you explain and describe that for us, please?
I cannot. That would be attorney-client privilege. That would be something we would have to discuss in an executive session. I can't go into what the liabilities in nation might be to the public.
But there, just on my reading, it looks like there would be a liability.
It would be
here.
Something for the AG's office to consider, whether we would allow for that to happen, yes.
Whether
we would recommend it.
So we're writing something in law that's doable but might be unlawful.
We don't know that it's unlawful. There's provisions in state law that allow for retailers to still purchase cigarettes. And we have that in a legal opinion.
Mr. Pipestem was in agreement.
And Mr. Pipestem was in agreement. And like I, then that opinion from Pipestone Law is also attorney-client privilege, so we can't discuss that. But we have one, we have two legal opinions that support that this can be carried out.
So, can I, has it been, so we're being asked to pass this into law. Has it been discussed with our retailers what liability they may have in participating in this?
Whether the retailers want to take on that liability is on the retailers.
I understand that, but I just wondered if it's been discussed with them that this is possibly how we operate in an uncompacted environment.
Not to my knowledge.
I believe a lot of that was in confidential. It was an executive session, so
okay.
It probably did not get discussed.
Thank you.
And I'm going to jump back up to Section 6, which is payment of the tax. I believe this section is mostly the same, except we've added in territory of the nation. It goes through how they're taxed, there's a stamp required. Retailers must ensure that there's a tax stamp. Things like, I believe all of this, a lot of this is the same, and only new section is Section E is in the absence of a compact. This section shall be deemed waived, and the tax commission shall comply with the provisions of Section 2.116 of this chapter. Which refers back to purchasing from tribal wholesalers. Then, Section 7 puts the compact payment revolving fund back in place in the treasury. States where the funds come from, that from the compact payment received from the state, that they shall be dispersed pursuant to Section 2.115, which is below, and that the compact payment revolving fund terminates upon expiration of the tobacco tax compact. So we're not in the weird situation we were in this past year where we didn't know if the compact expired, the revolving fund expired or not. So, Section 8 is new. That's compact payment allocation that allows the board to establish by rule the allocation payment amounts to be remitted to the retailers and the requirements to receive that such payments, and that such payments shall not exceed 50% of the compact payment amount received from the state. That percentage is what was in the original law. That was the original revolving fund language. And then the process, so then it goes to the treasurer, authorizes him to make the payments based off of notice and approval from the tax commission. Allocation payments to retailers shall only be made upon submission of invoices on forms approved by the tax commission and satisfactory to the treasurer. That he's allowed to make the payments without further appropriation from the Congress. Allocation payments to retailers shall cease upon expiration of the tobacco tax compact. So just making things much more clear. We've already discussed Section 9, purchase from tribal wholesalers. This new Section 10, again, like I've mentioned previously, the Attorney General's office has a case against one of our retailers, committed fraud, tried to change the name of his business, put it under his son's name, and we are in current litigation with him. And when we went to make determinations on what sections of the law he had violated and how we were going to impose fines, the previous legislation only allowed us to fine him for sections A, B, C, and D. And those were things that they're very broadly written, so we were able to get around them. But fraud specifically was like under like E or F, so we couldn't even fine him for the fraud that he had committed from filing a false report. So this section says we are able to fine you for all the violations that are under section 2-163. Section 11, it only makes sections 2-9 retroactive because under the principles of law, if you're going to change a fine, you cannot make it retroactive. So section 10 cannot be retroactive. I think that's all we have, unless Jen or nothing. Okay.
Committee, questions? Comments? Movement? Congresswoman Whitehorn.
So in the title, it says that to establish the tax rate on cigarettes and other tobacco products sold within the territory of the Osage Nation. What section does that?
Two 102 and 2 103. That it's either established by the compact or established by rule of the tax authority board.
So I think this is a point that I'm having some issue with this legislation, because there's not a place that the people that sell tobacco products that actually bring in tax revenue for the nation, there's nowhere where they can go right now to, in our law, to see what the tax rate is, to even help them make an educated decision whether or not they wanted to open a tobacco retail outlet with our government. So do you have a remedy for that?
These would all be posted online.
What would all be posted?
The rules would be posted online.
Or does it say that here somewhere?
That's required under the APA.
I thought you said that they were...
provisions of the APA that apply to the tax commission, and there's some that don't. But we can add that in here, that they're to be published. But there's also sections in Chapter 1 that require them to be published.
And then I think that we were discussing that, may I continue? That we were discussing that maybe those rules should be passed similar to our election code when they send their rules and regulations down after we change the law or amend the law, or they want to change any of their regulation. They bring it down to Congress for passage by resolution. I think that would be a good thing to do too with these. Did you say that you have your rules drafted and ready to go already?
That's unconstitutional, according to Sandy Bear v. Whitehorn. Their rules and policies and procedures do not have to come back through the Congress.
Why is that?
Per our Supreme Court, the other branch of this government that held that executive rules and policies and procedures do not have to come back through the body of the Congress.
Okay, I'll have to take a look at that.
Congressman Keene, did you have something? Okay. Members? What are we going to do?
Chair.
Congressman Tillman?
Yeah, thank you. Just like appreciate the discussion. There's a lot here, but make a motion to postpone Bill ONCA 2565 as amended to the with a committee sub to the call of the chair.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
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 Opposed? Have one abstention. Motion passes. So that leaves us with, I guess, 2565. ONCA 2548 is pertaining to the gaming enterprise. It's a sponsor is Congressman Maker. Congressman Maker, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to first say thank you for including this on the agenda today. I'd like to open up by discussing this a little history and how this came about. First of all, this isn't anything new. In fact, I sponsored this legislation 10 years ago, and it failed. And times were different back then, I understand that. We didn't have as many employees. We didn't have as many facilities back then. Now we have, we've really grown, and I understand that. But we've also grown in revenue. From what I hear, our numbers are greater than ever. And I also understand that we're in turbulent times nationwide, and how Indian country seemed to be under attack by outside forces. And as elected official, we have to do what we can to protect our sovereignty and our revenue, including our entertainment industry and gaming. But when I started thinking about this and running it through again, it's because I have heard, and this is months ago. Okay, again, let me go back. This isn't something we worked on just a few weeks. We've been working on this since last year, maybe a year's work on this, trying to get numbers. And I wanted to work with the casino executives in cooperation and in good spirit. It was my hope and dream and prayer that I could work together with them on this, because I understood they were also working on trying to do something for the employees. But it's been several years now, and we're still hearing the same thing. And so just in the spirit of cooperation, we have been working with the gaming people. Mr. Frazier and I, we were in, I'm not being critical of our gaming at all, please understand that. But we were waiting many months for numbers, the numbers we needed for Mr. Frazier to look at this and get a good account of how, if this could happen, and if it was possible to happen. And we've come up with a pretty good plan. And I'm going to let Mr. Frazier speak to that here in a few minutes after my comments. But this isn't something that I just thought up under a dream. I've talked to several of the employees at our casinos. And I asked them, it seemed like there was a little bit of a turbulence in the turnover, the morale of the employees. And I was told firsthand that was the problem. And I said, well, what would help? What could strengthen our gaming industry that could solve some of those problems of high turnover, low morale? And they said, well, what else could it be? Raise in salary money. And I we did some research, and we found out that most of 68% of our gaming employees are below the poverty level. And some of the employees, my plan was to help the lowest paid of the employees, not just give everybody a really great big raise, you know. But as the law states, you can't just give certain ones a raise and not everyone. So that's the reason why it got a little more complicated when I wanted to help just those that are obviously living in poverty. And I don't know how they could even make it on that salary they have. I'm sure some of our gaming people are well paid, and the employees, if they have a couple of children in school or even one in college, and they're making their mortgage payments, car payments, insurance, food, clothing, shelter, the basic necessities of life, I don't know how they make it. And they can't even get a second job because of their scheduling and the way their times, it changes monthly. And those people are working on weekends, holidays, when everybody else is off, but their families having a great time on Christmas and whatever holiday it might be. And we've had employees for gaming, I've been told, who hadn't been spent a Christmas with their family in 10 years because of their dedication to their job. And they love their job. These employees, they love their job. But what this will do is give them a better quality of life and just a better overall view of working in the Osage casino, Osage gaming industry. And we always, unlike everybody else, we want our gaming industry to be the best. That's the goal, should be the goal of everyone here. But I'll just stop there, and I would like Mr. Frazier to quickly go over how this would work and how it's been structured. And I think it's very fair and when it goes into effect and how many years it goes, it's going to be an increment. So, Mr. Frazier, if you could go. I know we're out of time just about, so if you could cut it quickly and give a little presentation on that, how that would work. Sir.
Mr. Chair, I do know it's 2 o'clock, so I'll be really brief. So I did submit a fiscal analysis on April 14th. Just very quickly, the cost in year one would be $462,000. Year two cost would be $818,000. Year three, $1.5 million. And year four would be $2.7 million. There are 559 employees who, when you account for only their hourly wage, earn less than $15 an hour. If you add in tips, it's 308 employees who earn less than $15 an hour. And then the breakdown demographically, 42 employees who earn less than $15 an hour are Osage Nation members, 133 are non-Osage Native Americans, and 384 are non-tribal members. And I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I could interrupt here real quick. I know we're out of time. I would just like to let you know, and I told you briefly during the break, that I have talked to Ms. Pearson, our CEO, and me and Mr. Frazier and I were meeting with them on Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and we're going to discuss this more, and they're going to tell me what they've been working on, and we're going to, I have talked a few times with them, but we're going to really go into it deeper this time and see if we can work together, which is what I want, to see if we can help these employees. So with that, I would like to postpone this, if it's okay with you and your committee, until after I have, we have our discussion with Ms. Pearson on Thursday.
Thank you, Congressman.
Move to postpone to the call of the chair.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Those opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. And number nine, I think I was delusional that day. I think I was sick. And I got casino crossed over with something else. So casino, they have no presentation. So next is adjournment. All those in favor? Yes.
Yes.
We're adjourned. Thank you, committee. The testy.